The Women's Fund of Greater Chattanooga is a nonprofit that works to improve the lives of women and girls in our area. Its new executive director is Erica Burnett, who comes here from Nashville. She plans to leverage her experience with advocacy, philanthropy, and building partnerships to address the root causes of inequity and create lasting change for women and girls. Erica, thanks for joining us.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
And welcome to Chattanooga.
Thank you. Everyone's been so warm and welcoming. Chattanooga's been one of my favorite cities to visit since I've been a transplant here in the South, and I'm looking forward to calling it home.
Now, you mentioned a transplant here in the South. I know that you are coming to us here in Chattanooga from Nashville. Tell us a little bit more.
Absolutely. So I'm a Midwest girl, born and raised between Detroit and Indianapolis. So my family is originally from South Bend, Indiana, where Notre Dame is located. That's our claim to fame. When my parents got married, we actually moved to Detroit. So I am very much a city girl. We relocated to Indianapolis to join the rest of my mother's family when I was a teen. And all of my adult life has been in Nashville, Tennessee, where I attended Tennessee State for undergrad and then Vanderbilt for my graduate studies.
Tell us more about the work that you have done in Nashville for many, many years that caught the attention of folks here in Chattanooga.
So I came to Tennessee pretty green, like most of us, especially thinking about spreading my wings. I was very young. I was actually 17 when I started college. And I've always had a passion for community. I say my first job was actually working as a volunteer teacher with the Children's Museum of Indianapolis. I was so excited when I turned 14 and I was able to volunteer at the Children's Museum, which was one of my favorite places to go and visit when I was a child. So when I would come and visit the city, my aunts and uncles, that was my favorite spot to go and visit. So when I became of age, the very first thing I wanted to do was be able to be in a space where I could share the joy and the learning that I experienced at the Children's Museum with other students. And I think that translated for me when I started to think about my career. So my undergrad major was actually English education. And like most of us who received teacher certification, I was able to commit my student teaching in our public schools here in Nashville. And at the time, which this would have been the early 2000s, Nashville had actually been identified as a youth violence hotspot nationally. So there were lots of not only federal dollars, but attention in the media and politically in thinking about how we could reduce the incidence of youth violence by really thinking about more of the root causes. That was really the launching point for my career. During my student teaching, I recognized for myself that being inside the classroom was not where I wanted to have an impact. I had one student in particular that I can recall who was shot during an altercation one weekend. Luckily, the damage was not life-threatening, but I just think about, I was able, that student allowed me an opportunity to really pause and think about what else was happening in his life, in his world, in the environment that would serve as a challenge for him to be able to come in my classroom and learn about Shakespeare, for instance. And really, that took on a life of its own. I pursued my master's degree in community development, specifically in thinking about what is the intersection between community-level disparities and the role of businesses and nonprofits in addressing some of those system-level issues and root causes. And so the unfolding of my career really was centered in how do we think about community issues, not just at the grassroots level, knowing that we have to provide direct services for individuals who are in need now, but then what are also those systems levels approach when we think about the intersection of different institutions, as well as policies and laws that will create the incubator for success for these populations who have been historically marginalized. So that took on a couple of different forms. I was a direct service provider with one of the largest youth service organizations here in Nashville. I was a grants manager thinking about trainings around domestic violence and interventions for law enforcement officers. And from there, had an opportunity to think more at the executive and leadership level of how are we positioning different organizations, both from a professional development perspective, but then also the on-the-ground tools that they need to be successful with populations, and where does collaboration exist within that entire field so that we're creating a more solid framework and safety net for the populations that we're advocating for and with. Most recently, I had the privilege of launching the Women's of Color Collaborative with a co-conspirator of mine, Nicole Kemp. She and I, our professional careers very much mirrored each other for about 10 or 12 years or so. And we got to the place where we recognized that there needed to be some intentional safe spaces for specifically for women and girls of color in this current environment, as we are thinking about where our social services are still not supporting the populations that are most at risk and most vulnerable. And as we think about all of the data points across education, across our workforce development, we know that that sweet spot is really our women and girls of color in particular. So if we can make life better for them, then by default, our communities become better. And that really is my positioning and how I've approached the work that I do in community.
Where have things changed for the better in Nashville over the last 20 years? Where have things still stayed the same?
Well, I think Nashville is a reflection of what we see across Tennessee, as well as really across our country. And so the changes that I have witnessed over the last 17 or so years include much more diversity just in our general population. So for those of you who may not know, Nashville was considered a sanctuary city for a very long time. And so we saw an influx of immigrant and refugee populations, families, communities that started to settle here in the city, which provided a wonderful opportunity for us to think more creatively and innovatively about what are those resources that are necessary in order for these diverse populations to grow and thrive. So the first layer of intervention was more from a safety perspective. How do we think about our hierarchy of needs? How do we provide safe housing? How do we have access to education? How are we thinking about workforce engagement and development? And then sort of the next tier of engagement that I've seen transpire over the last, I would say maybe 10 or so years, is then thinking about policies that allow for equitable access, access to professional experiences, access to funding for when we're thinking about small businesses. Who's at the tables when policies are being made or referendums are being presented, for instance? Whose voices are being reflected when we're thinking about issues of transportation? One of the moments of contention here in the city most recently was around issues of transportation. So I think we've seen these hotspots, issues, and policies, whether it's education, workforce development, or transportation, very specifically here in Nashville, take on a new voice where we're including the priorities of populations who not only have not been present, but have absolutely not had voices who even reflected their needs and their desires. And so what I've been really proud of the city, this city, and that I think is reflective of the needs across our state, is how we are including those voices farther upstream so that we're not just reacting to their needs from a place of a deficit, but that we can think about the assets that the diversity of thought and experience bring to the table early on when we're having the conversations on the front end.
How do you see the needs here in Chattanooga? How are they like what you have seen in Nashville? How are they different?
The first place that I've been able to identify some significant overlap is this understanding of pipelines for workforce development and also pipelines through our education system. So I've heard quite a few leaders in our community, in the Chattanooga community, as well as community members who are thinking about their needs, the needs of the populations that they serve, whether it's through a volunteer role or even within organizations that they're a part of or church homes, et cetera. It's the future. Are we setting up Chattanooga for success when it comes to our students? Do they have the education necessary in order to make them competitive employers, potential employers and employees within the city? Are we able to attract and keep talent in a way that allows the city to continue to grow and thrive? And I think those are questions that most cities are wrestling with right now. We know that gentrification is real. There is a very real cycle of ebb and flow within city cores and pushing individuals out. When we recruit new businesses who are going to be at the center of and anchors in our communities from an economic perspective, what are those practices? What are those recruiting practices? What are the hiring practices? What are the professional development opportunities that are afforded within each of those entities and those institutions? And how does that play into the bigger picture of diversity within our city? If we are thinking about and looking at the cross-section of our population, does our workforce reflect that? And does our work workforce reflect that at various income levels. I see those issues within Chattanooga the same as some, like for instance in Nashville, but it just feels different. There are different businesses, there's different history when it comes to individuals and populations that have been historically marginalized and or included at the table. I think what feels uniquely different about Chattanooga in my very little experience to date is the willingness to collaborate. One of the reasons that I attribute my success as a professional here in Nashville has been a willingness to sit at tables with folks who have a diversity of thought, whose lived experience looks very different than mine, and who maybe even entry points to understanding an issue may be from a very different perspective than my own. I have been greeted with such warm welcomes as well as an open invitation to think innovatively about what collaboration can look like. Where are those places that we can take a flashlight and shine a little into the cracks of the city so we can better understand what opportunities we have to bridge a gap? And so what I am unique looking forward to is the ways in which Chattanooga and all of its residents and the businesses and the nonprofits that I had a chance to meet with thus far are thinking about the intersection of all these issues. Yes, we all have very specific missions and we have to stay focused on that. We are uniquely positioned to do our work well, but we also need to know who we're playing in the sandbox with. And Chattanooga feels like it is primed to think about how we bridge some of those gaps in order to better serve the collective.
Tell me more about how these problems, these challenges, the type of collaboration that you were talking about, particularly impact and involve Black women and girls, a specific emphasis of your work.
Prior to our conversation, I had an opportunity to discuss these same issues with a member from the mayor's office. So an amazing, talented member of their staff who runs the fellowship program there that is specifically looking at creating economic pipelines for workforce development for individuals of color coming out of college and thinking about their early professional careers. So what we know to be true is that women of color are receiving degrees and are more highly educated, one, now than at any point in our history, but as a population have more degrees and are more highly educated than any other subpopulation in our country. That is absolutely a fact. And what we also know is that millennials overall are not staying in their places of employment for nearly the longevity that we see Gen Xers or baby boomers. Now, that is a very complicated issue. Some of that has to do with the culture of our workforce right now. It also has to do with the fact that many employers don't have the ability to provide upward mobility positions for this highly educated population. So if we think about where all of these problems intersect or these dynamics intersect, there is a proverb that talks about if you find a woman, and particularly a woman of color, a Black woman in this regard, that you can see the health of a community. And so if we just take this case study anecdotally, where you have individuals who are the most educated, right? But then we also know there's a historical implication around lack of resources. This is also the population that has the lowest wealth, individual wealth, household wealth of the majority of the subpopulations within our country, right? Then we see how there is a mixed matching of positioning, both from a historical and a current landscape perspective, and the capability and the capacity of this same group. Millennials are giving at a higher rate, even a higher rate than baby boomers to date. And so we think about then what is the role of philanthropy and how do we see our investment into a space? So all of these combined and with the shift in a political environment, knowing that Chattanooga is in a very interesting place right now where we're on the heels of a major election, knowing that there are going to be elected officials who will shift the trajectory of how we are prioritizing things in our city. Women and girls of color are not only most vulnerable given all the context that I just described, but they also are primed to be in a position to see the most change and the most progress and shift in their condition if we position ourselves successfully. And that is going to take collaboration. The reality is, when we talk about generational wealth and when we think about who has had power historically within various industries and across sectors, women and girls of color are at the bottom of the totem pole. And so my goal and the work of the Women's Fund, along with partnering with initiatives out of the mayor's office and thinking about amazing partners like Girls Eat, is to think about the full breadth of experience of women and girls of color and identify very specific strategies and campaigns that will help move the needle. How do we build pipelines for mentorship between the colleges and universities and important employers and pivotal industries within our community? How do we think about strategic positioning so that individuals are able to create that upper middle class, those levels of professionals that we see slowly fading away from our workplace environments, and thus we're not creating the pathways for those professionals that we want to stay in the city. And then we think about basic needs. We just did an amazing campaign with many of the other service providers in the city to provide period products for young girls, knowing that issues around hygiene, those issues that center the bodies of women and girls, are typically left off of legislative agendas, and oftentimes there are policies and practices even at our community level that don't allow for even the biology of a woman to be able to allow her to be successful in places. And so we not only have to think about that grassroots, what are the immediate needs of our girls and women right now, how do we bridge that gap for them, but then also what are the pipelines that we're creating in order to build a more sustainable future for the city.
Where can people go online for more information and to connect with you and the fund?
You can find us on all the things at womensfundofgreaterchattanooga.org. That's our website. You can find us on Facebook as well as Twitter and Instagram with the same handle.
All right. Erica, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.